Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. It is a happy Thursday. Even though the Astros lost last night, we still have baseball in Houston. Tomorrow we will have basketball. Not in Houston, but our Houston team will be playing. There is, for the second consecutive week, a major sport resuming its season on a Thursday night. That will be tonight. We get a TNT doubleheader with the NBA. Things are good, man. Green arrow pointed up, Seth Payne. Green arrow pointed up in life. Not so much for the Astros, especially especially in clutch situations, but life is good. How are you, my friend?
Look, they were playing probably one of the three best teams in Major League Baseball last night. Yeah. And I think that obviously the bats need to wake up at some point. We're accustomed to seeing much better out of this. I have one reason for optimism, Sean, and it's as simple as this.
Okay.
Guess where the Astros sit right this moment in the rankings for total runs scored?
Let's see. They averaged a little over seven for a four-game series. They scored two in each of the last two games. I'm going to say somewhere middle of the pack.
They're fifth. They're fifth right now.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're fifth. Okay. So this is not an Astros-specific thing. The offense around the league so far hasn't really taken off.
Yeah. And
now, they did play the Mariners for a few games, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that when you go up against one of the best teams in the league, if anything, I leave these two games versus the Dodgers thinking, you know, other than one inning 2 days ago, I was pretty pleased with the pitching. This has been out of a whole bunch of rookies and youth. And especially with Christian Javier last night, there's a whole lot of reasons for optimism, or at the very least intrigue at this point, as you see how these young guys fare in the pitching staff.
Yeah, look, the things that did them in the last couple nights are things that I expect to turn around over the course of even a short season, even a 60-game season. You know, like Bregman and Altuve, and especially Springer, they're going to start to hit in these situations. It's just, you know, you can set your watch to it. These guys have been doing this for a long, long time. I'm with you. Now, we'll get into Dusty Baker in a second because I feel like last night might have been the first night where some of the things that my friends who have rooted for Dusty Baker managed to teams before, who I consulted with when the Astros hired Dusty Baker, these were the things they warned me about. You know, that you're going to love Dusty. Like, personally, you're going to love him. You're going to love his press conferences. You're going to love his chutzpah. You're going to, you know, he's fun to cover, things like that. He's an easy guy to root for. He's going to do some things that have you either scratching your head or infuriate you when it comes to decision time. We may as well get to that right off the top here. Seth, what did you think of Dusty Baker's decision-making in these new rules in extra innings where we got our first taste? I got to tell you, like, it is intense. Our first taste of the runner on second base rule to start extra innings. That is some stress, my friend. And Dusty is catching a lot of heat for at least in the first three of the four extra innings that they played because they were down by two by the time the 13th rolled around. not bunting, you know, not right. moving the runners over to get the winning run into scoring position.
It's interesting because I think that would be, you know, the concern with Dusty would be, oh, is he too old school for the new analytically minded Astros? Yeah. And what does he do? He does the new age thing of not bunting when a lot of people would want to go old school and go small ball. And now he's being criticized for, I guess, not being old school enough. Look, smarter people than me to have opinions on both sides of this. I think that ultimately he's trusting his guys that they're going to come around at some point, that they're going to hit better than they are right now, and he'd rather just go for it that way. The odds and statistics show that you've got a better chance of getting the run in, even though it doesn't feel like it, mm-hmm. just by just swinging away. So that's what he did. I'm cool with it. I'm fine with it.
Here is Dusty's explanation of his decisions in extra innings last night.
Dusty, did you think about bunting with Toro after Correa tied the game in the 11th?
Yeah, I thought about it, but if I bunt, then it's up to, it'd have been up to, to Straw, I think. I thought about it, but, you know, with the hitters that we have here, I mean, who's up against Floro? Was it Altuve?
No, I'm talking about Toro after Correa tied the game in the 11th.
No, but he wasn't up there to, he wasn't up there. But if I was going to do anything, I mean, I might have left Dubs in to bunt. But, no, I didn't think about that. I mean, you know, they didn't bunt. We didn't bunt. You know, nobody bunted. And so, I like the matchup, with Toro, up there, and that's what he's here for.
Okay, so that's Adam Spillane who's asking the question from here at Sports Radio 610. Seth, there were three instances where they could have bunted to move things over to get the winning run in scoring position. I didn't have a big problem in the 10th inning with them not doing it because it's Jose Altuve who's up at the plate. Let Jose Altuve swing. I don't have a big problem with that at all. Guy's a former batting title winner. He's a former MVP. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. Let him swing. The situation that Spillane was referring to there, and I always feel bad for these managers where they get specific situations asked of them, and sometimes it's like, wait, that was who was up? Okay, you haven't had a chance to look at the score sheet yet. Abraham Toro was up after Correa had tied the game, and there were runners at first and second with nobody out. And I could see where on paper you go, yeah, you bunt, you move them over, and so forth. Straw was the one who was up next. Is Straw a guy who's going to hit the fly ball? Is he going to make the contact that you need to get the run home from third? Maybe. I also think it's interesting, too, that people think that a sacrifice bunt is automatically going to get put down by these guys. Like it's a free throw or something. Like it's 100% chance that it works,
People throw that out there like, oh, you bunt. Like they don't even say you try to bunt. You bunt. That would be like saying you go out there and you hit a single. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Like, it's not so simple. Not so easy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can get out, the undesired outcome can happen very frequently with a bunt as well. Look, at the end of the day, these guys who are supposed to be hitting in these situations, I don't care what base these guys are on or if you're moving guys over, if you're playing small ball, Springer's got to hit with guys on base. Bregman's got to hit with guys on base. Altuve, the guys you're counting on, Carlos Correa is doing his job right now. Carlos Correa has been splendid so far this year. Seth, that we had a vote to see if Kyle Tucker should be in the circle of trust should embarrass the two of us to no end yesterday.
Yeah. Well, that was
he's
that
mess.
Was,
he's awful.
No, we're getting kind of thirsty for just something to feel really good about. I'm not panicking about the Astros dropping two to a really good baseball team or anything. And these were competitive games, right?
Right. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I honestly, short season be damned. There's a lot of reason for optimism based on just the performances of some of the younger guys.
Yeah.
So, I'm good with that.
Your biggest concern going into the season was your biggest strength in these two games. The bullpen was really good.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the runs in these games, you gave up Javier was outstanding last night. I mean, we were burying the lead. Like that the Astros, man, it's one start, but it's a start against one of the best teams in baseball. And they're going to need somebody other than McCullers and Greinke at some point here, whether it's James or Valdez or, in this case, Javier. They're going to need a third guy if they're going to do anything this year. Maybe they've stumbled onto this. Maybe Javier winds up being the guy. Who knows? But, the runs they gave up in this series, they had the one bad inning, like you said yesterday, that Valdez, just the wheels fell off and the bullpen couldn't really shut off the faucet. And then last night, they were incredible. Javier gives up the one home run to Seager, and then Snead gives up the home run in extra innings. But, man, I mean, there's some young guys that did some things over the last 2 days, Belak and Taylor. And Snead had the one bad pitch to Rios last night. Abreu's been really good so far this year. A lot of these young arms have done a really good job so far.
And it was just really cool to see the looks on the faces of the various Dodgers as they tried to figure out Javier.
Yeah,
you know, he's just got really freaky stuff. That rising fastball. Look, I know it's an optical illusion, but I don't believe it. When they say, you know, with a rising fastball, it doesn't actually rise, it just looks like it. My God, yeah. That thing, I don't know how anybody can hit that thing. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Ocho texts in, Sean, all Straw did last night was hit fly balls. That's true. I'd have to go back and look. I think what Dusty was saying there's a certain style of hitter where you feel like, okay, this is a guy we can count on. Once we move these guys over, we can count on him getting the type of contact that we need to get the run home, and maybe Straw's just not that guy for Dusty. I think we learned a lot about Dusty Baker last night, you know, in extra innings. He feels like he's got one of the best lineups in baseball. He's going to let him hit. All right, we're off and running. The other big story yesterday, so the Astros lose last night to the Dodgers. They're 3-3 on the season. Joe Kelly, suspended for 8 games. A lot of talk. Was this too harsh a suspension for Joe Kelly? I think we need to learn one big thing about Joe Kelly and what Major League Baseball thinks about him with this suspension. We'll tell you what it is next. Joe Kelly gets an 8-game suspension from Major League Baseball. I got to admit, I was a little surprised. That's when I saw this news yesterday. I figured Joe Kelly would get something, but boy, it was 8 games. Seth, the debate with the 8 games that I've heard is this, that 8 games in a 162-game season, 8 games would feel like a fair suspension. But boy, in a 60-game season, that's like being suspended 22 games in a 162-game season. Where do you come out on that argument?
I this is where I come out on it. For one, he's already been suspended for 6 games. In his career after he had drilled Tyler Austin back in 2018. So he'd already been fined for throwing at a batter 6 games. So you up it to 8 games. And, yeah, I understand that, oh, well, it's each game is worth 2.7 games. Sure. So if you had hit Alex Bregman in the head and he had missed, you know, 10 games, okay, well, that's like missing 27 games. So go screw yourselves. That's what I say.
Yeah.
And I also... you know what's amazing is all these sports writers, like this, like Bill, what's his name? Plaschke. That clown actually went on, this, by the way, an Associated Press 7-time sports writer, sports columnist of the year for the National Sports Columnist Award. He went in and actually thanked, this is a writer thanking Joe Kelly for basically throwing at the heads of the Astros players.
Yeah,
you know, he didn't say it in so many words, but he thanked them for banging on the Astros.
We're gonna Zapruder his column at the top of the hour. Yeah.
So all these writers that are saying this is justice, this is the way it's done. How many of them would have written that same column if, you know, somebody had successfully been hit in the head?
Right.
If Joe Kelly had successfully made contact with Correa or Bregman's head. I doubt it, right? They wouldn't have the balls to do it then, and yet somehow this is what it's turned into, that because one team cheated and none of the other teams that cheated got caught, then the appropriate thing is for Joe Kelly, a guy who wasn't even on the 2017 Dodgers, a guy who was on the 2018 Red Sox, another team that cheated while beating the Dodgers in a World Series, that somehow somehow Major League Baseball is siding with the Astros because they chose to punish a guy that threw at 2 different guys' heads.
Yeah, I do think there's a distinction in how you mete out this punishment. Look, I've always thought that beaning guys, whether it's in the hip or the ribs or the head, whatever it is, I've always thought that was a really bizarre and cowardly way to get retribution for things that were not physical in nature. It's as cowardly as it gets when you just bean a guy because he hit a home run off of you. Like that's the lowest rung of the ladder. Like when guys hit a home run, don't preen, don't pose, don't bat flip or anything like that. And then the next time they're up, they get a ball thrown up at their chin. I think that's the most cowardly thing you can do. What Kelly did is in the neighborhood. You know, like throwing at a guy's head because you don't like a sign-stealing thing that went on 3 years ago is throwing at a guy's head under any circumstance, man. You hit that guy in the head, and you're talking about potentially not just a career-ending thing, but a life-altering thing. And it's Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly's one of the wildest relievers in baseball. There's a chance Joe Kelly was trying to hit Alex Bregman in the head and just missed by a foot because he stinks. But Joe, and the way that baseball, I mean, you brought up Plaschke, but there's people around baseball that are taking up for Joe Kelly. Marcus Stroman. Marcus Stroman, the pitcher, I believe with the Mets now, he got traded, was with the Blue Jays, got traded at deadline last year. This is what he tweeted yesterday. Makes zero sense, Ken. He's tweeting at Ken Rosenthal. He wasn't even thrown out of the game. MLB siding with / protecting a team that openly and knowingly cheated their way to a World Series. He doesn't deserve to be suspended at all. Hoping he wins his appeal. Looking forward to seeing you back out there, JK. I think we should mention it probably will get appealed and probably will get bumped down from 8 games to something a little less is my guess.
I wonder, then that would have to be based on the fact that it's a shortened season because, maybe, like I said, he's already been fined. Do you suspend somebody fewer games than they'd already previously been suspended just because now he was doing it to somebody that really, really deserved it? Look, we don't condone vigilantism under any circumstances unless somebody really, really deserves it. And then maybe I'm starting to wish that Manfred had never offered the deal that he did to the Astros because, frankly, then I think guys would have been a whole lot less forthcoming about the whole scandal.
Yeah.
And they would have been met with a concrete wall, and less of it would have been found out. It would still be lingering on. But the Manfred giving those guys immunity up front, is he was following kind of the RICO tactics that what the FBI established, where, hey, you just keep – you get guys, you give them immunity, and then they'll spill the beans, and then you're going after the kingpin.
That's right.
You're doing all that to go after the kingpin. Yeah. So in a, let's say in a drug ring, you get all these low level street dealers and what have you, and you let them off the hook as long as they rat out other guys above them. When the public hears about those things, they're generally cool with it because the public wants the kingpins, the guy that's in charge of murdering people and beheading people in Mexico. You want to go after that guy, right? That's like the true evil doer. Manfred followed those same tactics in this baseball investigation, and the problem was you do all of that to get the kingpin, Luno, but nobody gives a damn about Luno.
Right.
The public at large only cares about the star baseball players, so you gave them all immunity, and that's why people are so up in arms about it, and that's why they think there's hypocrisy and everything, because it's like baseball every couple months rolls out of bed and realizes, oh, wait a second. Oh, wait. Oh, you mean the Astros were never going to get punished? Like, right. Yeah, that was the deal from the very beginning, you jackasses.
Yeah, well, and I think with Hinch, too, when you bring up that analogy, with Hinch was a mob boss who was hoping that his guys wouldn't kill people. Like, Hinch was a mob boss who just would have rather run a Jamba Juice on the corner. You know what I mean? Like, he would have... Hinch was a mob boss who would have just rather owned a mortgage company in a strip mall somewhere, not murdering people to make his money. Like, Hinch didn't want his guys to do... Most mob bosses are encouraging... They're ordering guys to do it. Hinch was doing the opposite. Hinch was doing the worst thing you could do, which was not wanting his guys to do it, passive-aggressively smashing monitors to try to send a message and not directly tell his guys not to do it. So, you're right. The analogy holds up, and that's who they're trying to get. The problem with this whole thing relative to that is that the players are the ones hatching the scheme and Alex Cora. The players were the ones who were all gung-ho about doing it. Luno, I don't know where Luno falls on the gung-ho scale, but he's certainly not a likable character. He does probably fit the mold of a guy that you're happy got pinched in this thing more than Hinch does. Did you see Joe Kelly's post on Instagram, Seth?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, well, as you know, Carlos Correa, yesterday there were pictures going around on Twitter of Carlos Correa holding a baby, and people had photoshopped a picture of Joe Kelly's face on the baby.
The ugly baby.
The pouty face that he was making. Yeah. Joe Kelly on Instagram has a picture of him, I'm assuming with his three kids, two, it looks like twins in his lap, like maybe one-year-old twins, and then like a 4 or 5-year-old kneeling next to him. He went, or somebody went, and put Correa, Altuve, and Bregman's faces on the three kids.
Yeah.
Kelly's just sitting there smiling, holding all three of them, and he says, "Hey guys, with the suspension I received from Major League Baseball for my actions yesterday, I'd like to apologize to absolutely nobody." He's doing the classic wrestling heel thing where he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I came to this dump to wrestle in front of you people. He says the Astros are hiding in their dugouts because I'm suspended. Just wait till I get out. Hashtag free Joe Kelly. Hashtag apology. Hashtag Joe Kelly Fight Club. Hashtag Dodger. A lot of hashtags here,
wait,
man.
Wait, is that a hashtag? What is he? Wait, the Astros are hiding in their dugouts?
I guess.
Because why? Because he's suspended? Yeah. I don't know. I'm not following the logic there, Joe Kelly.
I'm just reading.
Between him and Marcus Stroman, it hasn't been a good look for the intelligence of Major League pitchers these last, if anything. So I guess that I look at that as a veiled threat. If he comes back and beans somebody again, he won't have the opportunity to do so. Then, okay, great, Joe Kelly. He was such a tough guy. Is Joe Kelly like into MMA or something?
No.
He talks a lot. Like, I've read interviews with him since where he talks a big game about how he's not going to let somebody punch him before he punches them. He's not going to get his jaw broke. But I don't – like, a lot of this he only backs up by throwing at batters who have no defenses against them.
Yep.
I don't understand where necessarily a lot of the off-field talk comes from.
All right.
I'd love to meet him in person.
Who, Joe Kelly?
Yeah.
Look, I'll take him. I'll take 10 Joe Kellys over one Joe Biagini. Let me just put it that way.
Did we ever figure out – I can't remember if we talked about this on air or off air. Dusty Baker, I think we talked about it on air. I'm pretty sure current Dusty Baker – 80-year-old Dusty Baker could beat the snot out of Joe Kelly.
No, we handicapped that in the last segment of the show yesterday.
Yeah.
We both took Dusty Baker. Yeah.
I feel like, you know what, too? It'd be sad because, Dusty would show a little bit of mercy, would hold him down on the ground, and he'd be like, don't make me hit you again, Joe.
Right.
Don't make me hit you again. And Joe would be like, yeah, I'm kicking your ass. He'd be one of those guys. Like, until you choke the life out of him, he will be insisting that he's kicking your ass.
Right. Some positive news that may be coming out of the Marlins COVID outbreak in their clubhouse. We'll tell you what it is next. All right, quick update on the Marlins situation. They are going to be not playing baseball through at least Sunday. Now there's talk that it might go till Tuesday till they play again. They had one more player test positive yesterday for the coronavirus. So that's 18 employees of the Marlins, 16 players, 2 coaches. Major League Baseball. Now, I guess here's the bit of good news with this whole thing is that the team the Marlins played the other day with what wound up being a COVID-riddled team on the field, they wound up playing a game with a bunch of guys who had the coronavirus against the Philadelphia Phillies. So in theory, they were endangering their opponents perhaps as much as they were endangering themselves. The stats actually bear out, at least so far, Seth, that that's not the case. That, yeah, they were endangering their own team because they were probably in the dugout, not socially distanced. They were high-fiving each other. They were in a locker room together, in a clubhouse together, touching all kinds of surfaces. I think we're learning that the Miami Marlins are just as irresponsible with the coronavirus as they've been with their roster and the welfare of that team as a business.
And we talked about that yesterday. Okay, how much do you blame individual players versus the organization? I think there's room for all of it because that's a very young team. And it's likely, at the very least, people have alleged that several of them were out on the town when they were supposed to be back at the hotel. The team obviously hasn't been monitoring that the way they could be, and it's just a mess. Whereas 29 other teams have done a pretty damn good job of it.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to get to. The 29 other teams, but specifically the Phillies, because they shared a field with the Marlins on Sunday. For the second straight day, the Phillies have had no positive tests. So I think it's a horrible thing, obviously, that's happening with the Marlins right now for their team. But I think for the optics of Major League Baseball, Manfred's had to answer a lot of questions over the last few days, and I don't feel any remorse for Manfred. But this seems like it would have been a very preventable thing if what we're hearing about the Marlins and their just carelessness is true. But I think we're learning some things here, and I think one of the good things we're learning is that the transmission of the virus on the field, again, it's just this one instance with these two teams, but that it's very, very difficult maybe for the virus to be transmitted. The contagiousness of the virus between two teams playing baseball with one another, I think maybe we're learning with the Phillies' spate of negative tests that that's something that's maybe not nearly as big a concern as we thought it might be.
Well, and that's where – and I think sometimes, you know – I think sometimes we as the public are poisoned by various dramatic representations of things. You think about at different times where I've watched movies or there was an episode of Scrubs where they were showing kind of like a visual of how a disease was being transmitted. And they always make it look like, oh, person A walks into the room, touches something, and then that doorknob is red. You know, that's infected. And then somebody else goes, and they touch the doorknob, and boom, then they're infected. And then they pass it on. It's not as straightforward as that. You know, it's like how much of the virus you're exposed to matters. Your body can overcome a certain amount of it. It's just that when you have that viral load expand and when it's in your face for an extended period of time, then there's a higher chance that you're going to catch it. So all these measures, as much as people like to scoff at the fact that, whoa, in football, they're going to be hitting each other, but then somehow they're supposed to stand 6 feet away on the sidelines. Yeah, like all those little things just reduce the total amount of time that you're exposed to the virus and reduces your chances. That's why wearing a mask seems to be working, because it just reduces your chances of passing it. And if you're the Marlins and you just, you know, just scoff at all of those things, you're screwed.
Yeah. So the Marlins, I saw this pointed out in an article yesterday, and I'm curious what you think, if there's a correlation here. The Marlins, as we probably suspect, are one of the youngest teams in baseball. They only have 9 players over 30 on their roster. Even more than that, 6 of those 9 are in their first year with the team. So I think where you're going, okay, well, how does that translate into the coronavirus sweeping through their clubhouse? Well, if we're to believe the stories that a bunch of the Marlins were out on the town in Atlanta, then it would seem to be that would be the behavior of a younger team. That would be the behavior of a team whose older guys maybe are not quite comfortable policing the younger guys yet, because they're by and large either irresponsible themselves or they're brand new to the team, so they don't feel the comfort level of being that guy standing in front of the clubhouse saying, hey, look, I know I've only been here 2 weeks, but listen, you need to do this, this, and this. You've been in a locker room. You were in a locker room for 10 years in the NFL. I don't know if you've let your mind go to a place during this pandemic here, or certainly with the NFL season getting ready to ramp up with training camp. What do you think the policing of this thing is going to look like in an NFL locker room?
I think
the policing specifically of the behavior off the field of guys.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it always ends up being, you know, what counsel you give younger players. Because it's not like J.J. Watt is going to, you know, follow Ross Blacklock home and make sure that he's, you know, he's not going to sit outside his driveway all night long and be sure that he doesn't leave. So, and I just choose Blacklock because he's a rookie, not because he seems like a pretty mature kid, actually.
Right.
But I think that it's a matter of just having those conversations. You know, when LeBron was in Cleveland, his last couple of years, there was a lot of talk about how much he was advising young guys not to go out as much and not to do the things that maybe he did when he was a younger guy, and the importance of sleep. Think about Justin Verlander with Alex Bregman and how much Verlander affected Bregman by preaching to him the importance of sleep. So it's a lot of advice, you know. It's a lot of kind of like being the uncle, the cool uncle that gives you advice and helps you out and everything, but doesn't have any real authority over you. That's what a lot of it is. And then the other part of it is just what example are you setting?
Mm-hmm.
And that goes a long way. If you've got veteran guys on the team that are thumbing their nose at the regulations and the guidelines, then the younger guys are definitely going to do it.
Yeah.
Whereas if the older successful guys are abiding by it and talking about it and walking the walk, then younger guys tend to follow suit.
One of the changes that's come out of this with this Marlins outbreak in the clubhouse is baseball is making all the teams hire essentially what amounts to like a crossing guard to bring with them on the road, you know, like a compliance officer, like a COVID compliance officer to bring with them on road trips to make sure that guys are doing all the things. They're not mandating that guys stay in the hotel, but they are now strongly encouraging that guys stay in the hotel. I would almost mandate that they stay in the hotel.
Yeah, I guess I got confused because at one point it was going to be a mandate when they were on the road to stay in the hotel, but apparently now it's not, or at least they discussed adding it again. Yeah, regardless of how, as a young guy, that's what needs to be impressed to them. It's no matter how. No matter how invulnerable you seem, like no matter how much you think that nothing will ever hurt you, fine, great, whatever. I'm not going to get into that debate. I would say it doesn't matter. It's all that matters is if you test positive, you're not going to be playing for a few weeks,
right,
and somebody's going to take your job potentially. Don't get Wally pipped by the coronavirus.
Yeah. No. That would be bad. So I think the fact that the Phillies have had no positive tests the last couple of days, and baseball as a whole, The other 29 teams are running clean COVID sheets right now. So I think the Marlins have created a real panic amongst a lot of folks when the fact of the matter is 95, 98% of the teams are doing the right things right now.
Right, and I think that's the problem is that, or I shouldn't say the problem, but I think the initial reaction was, oh, it's already happening. Yeah. Here's one
there it
team.
Is.
It's going to happen to everybody else. And that's where I wonder, and this gets sloppy and messy, but you hate to blame individuals for getting the virus because you never know exactly how it happened. And a lot of people might have just, you know, it could just be random chance or luck. But if the organization shows that they were completely negligent and they just flat out weren't following the protocols and what have you, then I would say, all right, you know what? Yeah, everybody that's a forfeit. It's not that the game is suspended. It's a forfeit. You know, it's like we don't even have to fine you or anything. You're losing those games because there's going to be teams that have to try to make up these games or something just because potentially the Marlins just weren't minding their P's and Q's.
Text message. This goes back to Joe Kelly. If you're just waking up, Joe Kelly got an 8-game suspension from Major League Baseball yesterday for the incident where he threw at Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa. You should know also that baseball has said part of it was also the taunting of Carlos Correa after the strikeout. Part of it was that Joe Kelly is a recidivist. This is not the first time that he's been sent to the principal's office before. And Joe Kelly, as we mentioned in the previous segment, put up an Instagram post where he says he apologizes not at all, and he had a slew of hashtags. Text message, Joe Kelly forgot some hashtags in his post. Hashtag, we cheated in 2018 too. Hashtag, I'm a little bitch boy.
Well, you know, the whole thing that started that was when he got his feet tangled up with Michael Brantley. And like I would imagine most Dodgers fans are aware that Michael Brantley wasn't there in 2017 and that, you know, he's largely an innocent bystander in all of this. The problem is, and this is what we keep running into, is that for the most part, most of the other fan bases are convinced that the Astros were still cheating in 2019.
Yeah.
That's where Astros fans rightfully get upset and angry is as well as in other areas, but that's the one that's the most frustrating. It's that look, they've been awesome on the road these last 3 seasons. They were awesome on the Altuve was incredible on the road in 2017. But 2019 especially, where there wasn't any evidence of them doing anything, there's people that are just convinced. They're like, nope, Altuve was wearing a buzzer, and they were all cheating, and this is all fresh and new.
Yeah, and the Astros off today, by the way. They travel to Anaheim to take on the Angels this weekend. In those games, Seth, that I guess they're not playing the same schedule they were going to play at the beginning of the year, but their first trip to Anaheim, I believe opening day for them was going to be in Anaheim, or it might have been the Angels' opening day was against the Astros. But either way, we know that there were a bunch of Dodger fans that were going to be making that long trip down the 5 to Anaheim to go boo the Astros. They're not going to get to do that. They're going to have to do it virtually, I guess.
They were going to show them. Yeah. It was just, boy, booing.
Somebody.
Nothing worse than booing. You know, some players might worry about having a ball thrown at their head or something.
Right.
But most of them are more concerned about angry fat people booing at them. That's really rough. That nothing destroys a young, confident man's life more than that.
Like hurt feelings.
Yeah
that's tough. Yeah,
and a bunch of Dodgers fans
being
upset.
The injured list with hurt feelings, yes.
What was the most of all the things that happened the other night, what was the most fight worthy to you out of the Joe Kelly incident? Would it have been when Dusty Baker, like, just say regardless of who said what to whom, like, what would have most? I'm gonna give you 3 candidates.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I need the list, give me the short
okay
list.
What would have sparked
the nominees
a fighting reaction out of you?
Okay,
let's see. There was Dusty Baker, we think it was Dusty Baker,
yeah,
telling Joe Kelly after that little entanglement with Bradley, Just get on the mound, you little bleeper.
Okay.
Either that or he said, you little
bleeper.
Effer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was either a little bleeper, a little effer, or an MFer.
It was a mean
one of those.
Name, yeah.
Would it have been
okay,
nice
one.
Swing? Would it have been nice swing, bitch?
That was Joe Kelly after he struck out Carlos Correa, looked over at him and said, nice swing, bitch. Okay,
yeah.
That's number 2.
Or would it have been, I don't want to do another Joe Kelly one. Let's do just Carlos Correa. Would it have been Carlos Correa kind of taking his pads off as he walked towards the dugout? Like, he's following you towards your dugout.
Yeah.
Like, if you're Joe Kelly,
like menacing you.
This guy is taking off. It's like almost like taking off your rings before you get in a fight or
right.
something, taking off your watch. Like, this guy's walking towards you. Is that at the point where, all right, you got to stop walking towards the dugout and go over there. Instead of being a big man on Instagram, right, actually face up to Carlos Correa.
So the three candidates, which would have been the one to most likely incite a fight from me, you're asking? Somebody yelling from the dugout, get on the mound, you little bleeper. Someone saying nice swing, bitch, to me after I struck out. Or the third one.
And
someone,
after he threw at you, too.
Right. And someone menacingly walking over towards me as if they're getting ready to fight. Clearly, Seth, for me, it's number two. I've been called an... sometimes you can call somebody an effer, and you're doing it out of affection. Hey, listen, you little effer, you know, that kind of thing. There's no sort of... bitch is not a pet name for anything. You know what I mean? Like, them's fighting words.
Yeah.
Them's fighting... Especially when it's someone saying... Especially when the person saying it to you is this wormy little turd who is just a talker and a chicken bleep heel who, when he says it, then runs behind all of his teammates. You know what I mean?
And it makes a little baby face.
Right.
That's where the worst look for America right now is that everybody's rejoicing in Joe Kelly making that really annoying baby face. Yeah. I'm dismayed by what America allows to pass for tough behavior anymore.
Right.
I think we've gotten soft enough now that, like, oh, Joe Kelly showed them. He made a baby face at Carlos Correa. Whoa, you don't recover from that anytime soon.
Did you see Daniela getting into the mix yesterday on Twitter?
What did she do?
She tweeted out a picture of this baby with just making the Joe Kelly face, basically. Just a meme, a gif of a baby, you know, just turning her face into the baby got the crying face going.
Who was it? Was it Kevin Durant that called Dwight Howard a bitch?
Probably at some point.
It was, yeah. That was another
one. I feel like Kevin
Durant
called everybody a bitch.
Kevin Durant's a much better, much better at his sport than Joe Kelly is at his sport.
Yes.
But
he's better with a torn Achilles at his sport than Joe Kelly is at his
sport.
Yeah,
but he's not quite necessarily what you would think of as a tough guy, right? So, like, Kevin Durant calling you a bitch, that's where the okay. I feel like there should have been more of a response by Dwight, because the problem is that Dwight can be baited so easily on the court.
Yeah.
You know, just with like a little shove here, and then Dwight has to retaliate, and then he gets the technical foul. I wanted a little bit more out of Dwight from that. When it's Kevin Durant, especially.
Someone texted, when Joe Kelly called Los a bitch, that's broken jaw worthy. Yeah, I think of the three scenarios you posed out there, Seth, clearly to me, the middle scenario, the one... The nice swing, bitch, is that's the scenario. That's them's fighting words right there.
Okay, let me ask you this. What's more offensive or degrading? Let's say, depending on which audio you heard and how you interpreted it, it was probably Dusty Baker saying to Joe Kelly, when Joe Kelly was, you know, giving the dirty eye to Michael Brantley, Dusty Baker either said, get on the mound, you little... effer, or he said, get on the mound, MFer.
Right.
Which one's more degrading, MFer or little effer?
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good, because Dusty's a big guy, so I feel like he's allowed to call people little, because relative to him, he probably, you know, Joe Kelly is smaller. I would say little effer is more degrading, though. You know,
I think so. Yeah,
MFer.
MFer can be a term of endearment when used properly.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I feel like it's more colloquial than little. Like little. Yeah, like that's once you start bringing a man's size into it. You know, like that's So
you're putting him down there. You're talking down to him.
Yeah. No, I think it's accurate. That's what Joe Kelly is. He's a little effer, and he acted like one after he tried to act like a tough guy, and then he goes and runs behind all his teammates.
That must have been Dusty's. That must have been the reason for Dusty's fine, I suppose.
Yes,
for that element. That he also cited the COVID, the fact that the guys all went closer to the guys confronted each other. That was a COVID violation.
Right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. And
I wonder if Dusty would have been fined less if he'd sent MFer instead of little effort.
I would start to respect Manfred a little more if he started to rate his fines based on the quality of the insult.
Yeah.
You know, I just can't bring myself to fine the guy. Like, that was really funny. It was great. In fact, he's getting a bonus.
Honestly, I tried to put myself in Joe Kelly. I put myself in Joe Kelly's position. And if Dusty Baker had said that to me, I would have gone off the rails.
I would have lost it.
Yeah, like it was pretty good trolling by Dusty Baker.
Yeah, this is...
That's what happened. It was he was called a little effer, and then he got up to the 3-0 count with Bregman. He's like, "I'll just screw it all to hell.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore."
Has anybody ever fired an insult at you that just set you off like that? Like them's fighting, where either on the field or in a bar.
Yeah, I'm sure it's obviously at some point they have. Yeah. I can't think of. I'll have to think about that during the break.
Okay,
like what was my trigger?
Yeah,
I can't, Sean.
What's your Achilles heel?
That'd be like telling somebody what my phobia was or something.
You're That's true. I forgot the text page exists.
If I'm Indiana Jones, I'm not telling my worst nemesis that I'm afraid of snakes.
Yeah,
you're right.
You're right. So we had a few more players opt out yesterday in the NFL, Seth. Couple interesting ones. Nate Solder with the Giants, which if you know anything about Nate Solder's story, not a surprise at all. And
yeah,
it's something
child
that
his kid has cancer.
And he had cancer at one point too. He's a cancer survivor and I think we learned that from when the Texans were recruiting him here a couple of years ago. I think when the Texans wanted Nate Solder to be their left tackle, a lot of the speculation was, well, he's going to stay up in the Northeast because he's got a son who's sick, who has doctors that are up there. And even though we've got a great medical center here, his doctors are up in that part of the country, so he winds up signing with the Giants. Yeah,
that's crazy, by the way, because Nate Solder had testicular cancer, and then Marcus Cannon had, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, they've had two tackles that have had cancer as young men. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's weird. So Nate Solder out. They drafted a young tackle. I think they drafted a young tackle maybe because the draft did take place after the coronavirus hit, so maybe they did that kind of knowing this might be coming. But Nate Solder, who might have been a Houston Texan had things gone differently a couple of years ago, he is opting out of the season. Damian Williams, who was the leading rusher for the Chiefs this past season, granted, leading rusher with just 498 yards. Obviously, it's Patrick Mahomes and the passing offense that make that thing go. But they
had a good Super Bowl. Had a really good Super Bowl.
And he's a good player. He's a good player. He was banged up. He only played in, I think, 10 or 11 games. So he's a good football player. They, again, maybe a team preparing by using the draft. I don't know. But we know the Chiefs used their first-round pick on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back out of LSU. So, Seth, if you're looking for fantasy advice, stock up on Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of LSU, the young running back who is, I'm almost by default, is going to be the bell cow guy for the Chiefs this year, probably.
It's interesting what's going on with the Patriots. And now I have to remind everybody, Nate Solder isn't a Patriot. I still think of him as a Patriot. But the Patriots have had a disproportionate number of guys opt out. And frankly, If I had to handicap it beforehand, I would have thought the Patriots would have had the fewest guys opt out. I almost would have felt like Bill Belichick would have shamed these guys out of it. But I do wonder, now a couple of those guys have serious medical concerns, Marcus Cannon, one of them has a family member that has serious medical concerns. But I wonder about Bill Belichick and kind of the culture he's created there, where frankly, it's the kind, just because I played for Coughlin and I know the same type of guy and I've talked to guys that played for the Patriots, you're miserable all the time. You're stressed out all the time. You just feel like you're being told you suck all the time. It's just that kind of an environment. And I wonder if guys are a little bit more willing and quick to pull away from that now that Tom Brady's not there and now that they're not Super Bowl contenders. Because remember, even though these guys are stepping away from their salaries this year, it just gets moved to next season.
Yeah.
They're not like walking away from it completely. Their salary from this year basically gets rolled over into next year. So they don't get paid this year, but theoretically they could make the same money next year. What's it going to be like with Belichick now that he can't say, well, hey, I'm treating Tom Brady like this, so everybody else should be cool with it?
Yeah, Seth, when this was all going down the other day, when you were out the day these guys were all opting out, like segment after segment, guys are opting out. I said that exact same thing to Wade, which was, look, this might be the tiebreaker now in something like this, which is, I want to play, it's a lot of money, but hell, I've been thinking about how nice it would be to take a year off from this guy anyways, like having to go to camp and be, all the same reasons Brady left to go to Tampa Bay. I think it's perfectly logical that those could be the same reasons that guys like Dante Hightower and Patrick Chung, who are in no danger of maybe being blackballed's probably too strong a word, but in no danger of maybe not having their love of football questioned to the point where they're going to be cut from the team and not have that salary waiting for them next year.
Right.
You know, like they're not going to cut Dante Hightower because he voluntarily opts out without a medical condition. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. And that's just what I get angry sometimes at the way that I think that honestly people in New England don't even really appreciate Tom Brady for all the things he does, like that they took for granted. Even though they talk about it all the time, I don't think people realize what a big deal it is and how rare it is that Tom Brady let Bill Belichick talk to him like he was a rank rookie at times, and that set an example for how everybody should not have an ego and should be eminently coachable and everything. And you think about just put Aaron Rodgers into that environment.
Yeah.
You think Belichick could have acted the way he did with Brady to Aaron Rodgers? Aaron Rodgers would have been off in the corner writing poetry about how sad he was.
Yeah.
He would have been curled up in a ball in the shower. Yeah, it never would have worked that way. And then that filters down to everybody else and you have more drama. Brady did so many things above and beyond just quarterback rating or stats there that people don't appreciate, and that I think Bill Belichick's ego prevents him from even understanding. And Belichick would say, I'm a moron, I'm an idiot, I'm a dolt. But I can just see by the way they've treated him that they flat out don't genuinely appreciate. They think it's more the system than it is Tom Brady.
And Seth referred to this article a little earlier in the show. If you're just waking up with us here, the Astros lose last night in extra innings, 4-2 to the Dodgers. The other big story, Joe Kelly suspended for 8 games for throwing at Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa, in addition to a number of other recidivist things that Joe Kelly has done in his past. So suspended 8 games. There is a columnist in Los Angeles, though, that literally alludes to wanting a statue built for Joe Kelly because of what he did the other night. The worst take on the Joe Kelly brushback pitches that you're going to hear anywhere. Big surprise. Comes from L.A. is next.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.